Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, May 25th, 2023. Today on The Ether, informal spaces, Atomic IBC, Synchronous IBC, live working session. Let's take a listen.
Okay, we have Nick and Elijah. We have Marius, we have myself. I think we're good to get started here, unless we want to wait for a few more listeners.
Yeah, I'll just give a little...
I also see Susanna. So I'm really glad to see you here, Susanna, from the IBC team. Maybe she might want to weigh in at some point or not.
But yeah, sure. I'll just kick us off and get started with just housekeeping. Again, everyone, thank you so much for joining us for our informal spaces. This is recurring every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern time. So set your reminders, follow us on Twitter to get those notifications. We'll also be, you know, having a recap of this. So stay tuned for that. We'll be launching a newsletter soon. So if you want to go to our website and subscribe to the Informal Systems newsletter as well, that'd be great. And join us on the forum for discussion of props. Just a few housekeeping items at the top. Anything discussed in this Twitter Spaces is not investment advice. It's just a view into the conversations that are happening at Informal Systems. We have an Informal Conversations on the Hub with Jahan on our YouTube and Spotify, as well as the Duality episode on YouTube and Spotify. So tune in there. We still generally have kind of a small crowd, but I think we can go ahead and get started with just introducing everyone on the stage right now. So, Jahan, if you want to kick it off.
I'm Jahan Trembeck. I'm product owner at the Cosmos Hub team at Informal Systems. And I try to think about, ways that we can, new things we can bring to the Hub. Obviously, that's our main focus here has been replicated security. Over the past while. This Twitter space is to talk about, synchronous or atomic IBC, and in general, more broadly, just about what kind of UX improvements are possible with replicated security, given that all the replicated security consumer chains share the same validator set. There could be great possibilities for sort of tighter integration and improvements of UX.
Awesome. Marius, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Marius Fokke. I'm the project lead in the Cosmos Hub team at Informal. So clearly I'm working very closely with Jahan. Last year I also worked a lot on IBC specs. So, and also a bit we are working at Informal on the scheduler. Right, which had some things to do with the topic today, right? Atomic atomicity and synchronicity when it comes to IBC transactions and transactions on cross-chain. Happy to be
awesome.
Here.
Glad to have you. Elijah, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Elijah. I do a lot of the research product stuff at Duality, occasionally business development, and when they allow me, engineering. I'm really excited to talk about IBC UX, especially within the Atom Economic Zone. I think that it's a really, really interesting and relevant topic, given where Cosmos and Cosmos
Hub
is going.
You should maybe briefly also introduce Duality as well, people of context.
Yeah, great idea. Duality is trying to solve a lot of the problems that we saw with DEXs. We got really excited about the ability to build full stack applications. We really, really believe that, serious decentralized financial applications of the future are going to require the full stack. They're going to require tailoring over, block times, requiring tailoring over transaction ordering and inclusion, automating execution via end block and begin block. And so Duality is basically like our way of bringing all those ideas to life with, coming from Ethereum, finally being able to like, you know, leverage all of these tools that like the Cosmos stack actually allows you to. And so it's a concentrated liquidity DEX, very capital efficient. You know, it'll give traders the experience of trading on an order book if they like, but also, you know, it can replicate the experience of trading on an AMM if they like. So, you know, the people who like more professional or traditional financial trading experience, you know, they'll get that. And then the people who want something that feels a little bit more DeFi native, you know, they'll also get that, except it'll be, you know, all in one place. So, you know, it'll be as seamless as possible.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Nicholas, you ready to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Nicholas. I'm the other co-founder of Duality, a longtime Ethereum developer turned Cosmos native. Well, trying to become as Cosmos native as possible, but definitely a Cosmos enthusiast at this point. Happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. And Zaki, we have a last minute addition to the roster. Would you like to introduce yourself?
He might just want to listen. You know, maybe he's, you know, doing his laundry or running.
Well, he requested to speak. So,
but also I would say not just Zaki, but, you know, Susanna, anyone really, obviously it's Twitter Spaces, but I do see listeners here who have expertise, at least who I know is Zaki, Susanna, Marie, Philip Lafiere, you know, there's a lot of people in here actually are experts on these topics. So it's really cool to see.
Yeah. Zaki, did you want to introduce yourself? Oh, he went back down to requested. I think we can get started while we have Zaki come back up or not.
So I'll lead off, I guess. And basically, the way I see it from a high level is that if you look at, Zaki turned one on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Before we get kicked off, did you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Zaki. I've been working on Cosmos for a very long time. Co-founder of Sommelier. Did some various other things.
Awesome. Glad to have you. We can dive right into what Johan was talking about. I think we're getting into, improved UX on cross-chain interactions, things like that. So handing it over to you.
Yeah, so to continue, the way I see it from a very high level is if you compare, it's interesting to compare replicated security to replicated security with multiple consumer chains that are all running with the same validator set, but with separate, you know, separate chains, separate instances. If you compare that to one chain that runs a lot of a lot of contracts, let's say, it's an interesting comparison because, we can take Ethereum as an example. So there's lots of applications on Ethereum. They all run on Ethereum on one chain, but they're all independent applications, who have their independent release cycles and stuff like that. And then on the other side, we have replicated security, which is, you know, independent applications with independent release cycles, but they're all running on separate chains. So the biggest difference is, in my mind, the biggest difference, there's many differences, of course, but one of the biggest differences is that on Ethereum, in a given Ethereum block, you have to run all of the transactions, or, you know, you don't have to run all the transactions, but all the transactions that might be transactions from separate apps on Ethereum all have to run, they all have to go in the same block, and they all have to run in sequence. They have to run synchronously. And there is there's kind of a limit to how many transactions you can do. And that limit is roughly based on the maximum processor speeds. And processor speeds have plateaued over the last 20 years. So there's a pretty hard limit to the scalability of single chain things. And that's why there's so much research into, you know, even the Ethereum space into sharding, rollups and stuff like that. All these things are ways to get better parallelism. And another way to get parallelism is using app chains in Cosmos, where you have different chains and they have transactions coming in. And the transactions that are happening, the transactions that are happening on one Cosmos chain can be happening at the exact same time as the transactions on another Cosmos chain. And so with replicated security, what you get is you have the ability for those transactions to be happening at the same time in parallel. But you also have the same security guarantees across any, you know, replicated security consumer chain. So, anyway, that's kind of a long lead in, but where I'm going with that is basically that, like, there's a big scalability advantage to having transactions processed in parallel. But there's also a downside, which is that it's harder to reason about and harder to program with, and there's less guarantees. So one of the things, like, with if you imagine a, you know, future where there's many replicated security consumer chains, or it's just really the same as, you know, the app chains on Cosmos, just more secure, that you have right now. But there's some things that are possible on Ethereum which are not possible across, you know, across replicated security consumer chains. So one of those things is, like, one use case that I think is useful to look at is like arbitrage across DEXs. And then also, you know, flash loans can play into that. Flash loans are really cool on Ethereum. But basically, it's possible on Ethereum to go take out a loan in one contract. The flash loan is basically you take out a loan, and then by the end of your transaction, you've paid the loan back as well. And so you can basically borrow any amount of money with no collateral, because you're going to pay it back basically immediately. So that means that if you don't pay it back, like, the loan never even happens. So it's like whatever you're doing, it has to work. And so that allows you to borrow money to do stuff without having to have a collateral capital to do yourself. So one example is like arbitrage. You can take a loan out. I forget which contracts in Ethereum allow you to do this, but, you know, you take a loan out on some kind of money market type contracts and take that to a decentralized exchange like Uniswap. Do a trade to basically take advantage of some kind of price imbalances that might exist, and then return it all in the same transaction. And so because of the fact that this transaction basically can't fail, there's no, or if it does fail, it's like you never took out the loan. There's like no risk. And so you're able to borrow huge amounts of money to do that. And so that kind of thing, people doing that provides, you know, price discovery and liquidity and stuff like that on DEXs on Ethereum. And so what I want to kind of explore is, how do you do that with IBC, and how does replicated security, where you have a bunch of chains who all have the same validator set, facilitate that? Can it facilitate that? And can we basically figure out a way to have, you know, synchronous or atomic IBC, whatever you want to call it? We'll probably delve into what the distinction is actually on this Twitter Spaces. But how do you sort of enable that sort of thing, like where you're doing multiple things on multiple chains, but they're all part of essentially the same, you can think of them as the same transaction, and you can predict exactly what's going to happen. Like, somebody's not going to do something else on another chain before you while you're trying to do your transaction. And if your transaction fails, it's like none of it ever happened. So just trying to explore what, you know, where can we use replicated security to enable that kind of thing. And then more broadly, we may get into, we'll see what we, you know, where the conversation goes, but we may also get into what other UX improvements are there with replicated security. There's other things as well. But yeah, I'll let someone else speak now.
Yeah, Marius, we're just, you had some things that you wanted to say at the top when we were prepping. I think this would be a great place for you to kind of dive into that.
Yeah. Thanks, Isabel, and thanks, Jehan, for the intro. I think it's very important to start by differentiating between to come with the terminology, right? So there is a lot of talk about synchronous IBC, a lot of talk about atomic IBC, synchronous cross-chain transactions, and so on and so forth. So what's very important, I think, is to differentiate between synchronous and atomic, right? So in my view, so this is kind of the standard way to look at it. Synchronous means more or less at the same time. So of course, time is relative. So let's say more or less at the same time. And atomic, this is a very important property, right? The atomicity comes from exactly what Jehan was kind of saying, right? Either all of it happens or none of it, right? So if we think of a cross-chain transaction, right, which consists of multiple actions, one is buying on a chain, and then the other transaction is selling it on another chain, right, as an asset. You don't want to just do half of it. Right, you don't just do the buy, because then you remain with the asset and you cannot sell it at the price that you wanted, right? So it's either both of them happen at the same time or neither of them happen. And this is actually quite difficult to do in a distributed system. So this is not a blockchain problem. It can be, we can make it a blockchain problem, but this is an old problem of coordination in a distributed system, right? So, and this is implemented with the simplest solution would be a two-phase comment. Right? We don't, I do not think that we need, in the case of blockchains, we can assume that the blockchains that are involved, let's consider a simple example with only two, that cannot crash, right? Because we have reliability. So we two-phase commit will be enough. So now the question is, how do you implement that? If you want atomic. Now, atomicity is not necessarily something that you want. You can actually cut corners and try to achieve something else. So this is very important to try to figure out what's the end goal. But synchronicities can also be good enough.
Yeah, maybe, well, maybe Elijah and Nick can jump in here too on this question, but it seems to me that, well, in the case we're talking about, we don't only want it to be atomic. We also need, so you don't only want it to be that if first part of your transaction fails and the second part fails. So that's also actually could be useful for different things. But what would be really good is that when you do the first part of your transaction, you know, let's say you're between two chains, or you're going between two chains, you're going to arbitrage between two replicated security consumer chains. You want to know that when you start the operation on the first chain, that nobody is going to do something on the second chain between the time you started the operation and then it completes on the second chain. So for, in the case of arbitrage, we wouldn't want somebody else to have done the arbitrage and then for the price to change. Ideally, that would be the ideal scenario, I think. But yeah, Nick and Elijah, maybe you have something to say about this too.
Yeah, so it is important to define what exactly the benefits of synchronous composability offered by chains like Ethereum or on Cosmos by individual chains that work. The benefits of this synchronous composability is that you know that when your transaction is run, you're kind of getting 100% of the attention of this massive computer. And you know that since your transaction is getting basically 100% bandwidth as it's being run, you also know that there's no state that will change during your transaction. So you know you can guarantee that the state that existed when your transaction begins will only be modified by what's inside your individual transaction. And that allows you to do all these cool things like you mentioned, like these flash loans and a bunch of MEV and DEX aggregation, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems to me like atomicity can be achieved via synchronicity, but not the other way around.
Does it seem like synchronicity is stronger? It's like a stronger guarantee than atomicity.
Yeah, because like atomicity, you can kind of wrangle together, but not always. So there are instances where you can wrangle together atomicity with IBC middlewares that are conditional upon the success of something, and if on a failure case, then you can go unwind. But there are certain actions that are difficult to unwind programmatically. Say you perform a swap on a chain, and you want to then forward that and do another swap on another chain. So if you start on a chain, the first swap succeeds, then you go to another chain, and the second swap fails. Now, in order to actually unwind this and have what you might call an atomic MEV, an atomic cross-chain IBC transaction, you would need to undo the swap on the first chain. But you can't undo it perfectly because you've already paid fees. The block has already gotten moved forward, so you can't actually make that happen. You can create atomic transfers because you can quite easily roll back the transfer. But if you have a synchrony assumption, or if you have some sort of working mechanism for synchronous IBC, you are able to more easily implement a lot of these atomicity guarantees because you know that nothing really changes. So there is the option to have a rollback or revert.
Yeah. And I don't know if Marius or someone else wants to weigh in on that as well. But I can go with an example of synchronous IBC. A very bad example, a naive example, which would be very expensive to run. but I think it's a useful starting point. And so the way you can make synchronous IBC happen, and this actually wouldn't require replicated security either. This would just work, you know, it work wherever, I guess. But what you could do is you would do your transaction on chain A, and then you would like buy out. There was a mechanism for this to sort of reserve several blocks on chain A and chain B for yourself. And so you would do your transaction on chain A, and then you would pay to ensure that nobody could do any transactions on chain A or chain B until your entire operation was done. And if you did that, you would have, I would call that synchronous IBC, because you would be sure. Now, of course, it wouldn't actually be totally synchronous in terms of, you know, time, you know, in absolute sense, but you would be sure that in terms of like the blockchain and the progression of events on the blockchain, that nothing happened on either chain until your transaction was done. So it's like you had a frozen moment in time. But of course, that would be very expensive, because you'd be having to pay for several blocks on two different chains. But I think it's an interesting starting point.
Yeah, it definitely is an interesting starting point. Although, you know, you can't even count on one hand the amount of complications or issues that might bring, and also the cost of having it work that way. But it is a solution to the problem, because again, the synchronicity issue, or the synchronicity benefit, is that you can guarantee state. And as long as you can do that, it doesn't actually need to be synchronous in terms of time. And we might need a different word for it, because synchrony actually does mean that. But yeah, it's a way to achieve the same output.
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, one other thing I remember you've talked about before, Nick, is actually is that there may be something that may facilitate this. Is there's actually two different things you talked about being able to facilitate this. One is having synchronization between the blocks on the different chains that are involved, so having the blocks happen actually at roughly the same time. And then another one is to have IBC transactions that can go through that are sort of like trusted IBC transactions, where they do not depend on a client update. And I was wondering if you'd, you know, talk a little bit more about how that would facilitate synchronous IBC.
Yeah, I can give a little bit of background. So on your second point, IBC transactions without the requirement of a like client update, the rationale here is that in certain scenarios, such as replicated security, the validator sets are very, very strongly overlapping, and the security assumptions of IBC are a little bit different, in that you no longer need like the full trust of non-overlapping validator sets and proofs. What you can do instead is kind of implicitly trust these special IBC transactions internally. And since you know that they're coming from the same validator set, or roughly the same validator set, these security assumptions are slightly different. So you can have reduced security IBC transactions, but they're not actually reduced security, because it's the same validator set. On the first point around synchrony, it was more around the crude solution would be, hey, let's all the replicated security chains all share like the same block, for example. Then you're basically Ethereum, where you can synchronous transactions via IBC. Because you actually don't even really need IBC.
Yeah, but then you would lose the scalability benefits of, you know, Cosmos.
Exactly,
in general.
You'd lose the scalability benefits.
Yeah.
So that is the issue.
Like,
so
pick and choose when you want to go to this, you know, when you want to go to the synchronous mode and when you want to have your stuff run in parallel.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's I guess what we should try to weigh out.
Yeah, and it would be, I mean, synchronous IBC transaction, my assumption is for sure it would be more expensive. So you'd be paying something extra. One other thing, which kind of goes back to our sort of scheduler work that we've been doing last year, was, maybe Marius can speak to this as well, but basically, I think one other thing that could facilitate this is to have the same proposer, between between these different chains that are trying to do the synchronous IBC. So one and the reason for that is that, you know, and just I'm probably most people here are familiar with this, but you know, the way it works with Comet and Tendermint and consensus protocols in general is that you have the validators are basically voting on whether blocks are valid. So they just make sure the block, you know, conforms to the rules and stuff like that. But one of these validators is chosen as the proposer for every block. And they're able to say what transactions actually go in. And the other validators are just saying, you know, these transactions look like they're valid, but they're not necessarily saying, you know, these are the transactions that should have gone in. So the way it could facilitate this is that if you have the same proposer for different blocks on different replicated security consumer chains, at least when they're trying to participate in synchronous IBC transactions, if you have that same proposer, what that allows is that proposer can actually sort of, by them having the ability to determine what goes into those blocks, they can kind of, the property we're trying to preserve here is that you do the, you know, step one of your synchronous IBC transaction, and then nothing happens on, you know, on the other chain between the, or even on either chain, maybe between the, you know, step one and step two and maybe step three of your synchronous IBC transaction. So by having the proposers be the same, you kind of enable that proposer to maybe make that happen because they control everything that goes into the blocks. So that might be another tool we can use. Marius, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, on this idea with the proposer, I remember that we were discussing this last year. An issue there will be that you can get some type of synchronicity, but you may end up executing transactions that are not atomic, right? So imagine a scenario where you have the same proposer, but actually there are two nodes, right? Two separate nodes. So if this proposer doesn't have a method of communicating so that what you have to do when one wants to commit the block on one chain, the other one needs to provide it the information, yeah, you can commit. So to basically have an off-chain protocol between these proposers, right, between these two nodes. And if you have something like this, actually, I don't think you need to synchronize on the proposers. So the idea will be the following. And we were thinking this last year, and we just didn't follow through. So kind of we stopped that work, focused on replicated security and to release it. But the idea was, okay, so we do have in replicated security a huge overlap of the validator set. So you need somehow to exchange information between these validator sets. So then when you, before you are actually committing a block, to get the information from the other chain help you decide, do I commit or I don't commit, right? And this has to be done by every node. So every node should be able to take the decision, and the decision needs to be deterministic. So this is very important, because if not, you are breaking consensus. Also, that information cannot be passed through IBC, because passing it through IBC will take several blocks, at least one, right? Because that information needs to be relayed and needs to be sent in a transaction. So, but what we can do, it's every node to run an off chain process where they are interacting with their counterpart node on the other chain, right? So, and they do some type of two-phase commit or some type of coordination protocol between them. So, and none of them is actually voting, yes, I'm going to commit this, without the other one voting that it will commit. So such protocol may enable to create some type of two-phase commit among two chains and enable this atomicity.
Yeah, so we're talking about there would be like basically like some kind of process where the, you know, the I guess probably the Cosmos SDK application, or maybe at that level, I think, or maybe it would be at the Tendermint level, I'm not sure, but it would actually be communicating between the different Tendermint Comet or Cosmos SDK instances that were running on the different chains that are run by, you know, one validator, right? And so yeah. It'd be like, my two instances of Comet that are running two different consumer chains, but are both controlled by me, they talk to each other and they trust each other because they're being run by the same.
Exactly.
Company. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the reason, because you have the trust factor already, because it's the same organization, right? You can simplify a lot of this protocol. You don't have to think of, oh, wait, what if the other guy is malicious? What should I do? No. You trust all the information that is exchanged. Also, you have access to exchange this information, because a lot of validator nodes actually are running behind firewalls and stuff. So that's another problem. To actually think of, to try to simplify this problem, simplify it conceptually, but it's a very difficult to implement, you could do all of this in Comet. So I was talking actually today with Adi, and you're saying that, yeah, look, it's possible to modify Comet to run something like generalized Paxos, right? So to run multiple namespaces in the same instance of Comet, right? Each namespace is a blockchain. If you think of what Comet is doing, it's creating a sequence, an order sequence of transactions. So I imagine that you have multiple of this order sequence, each of them according to a namespace. And now, given that you have all of it running in the same process, you can start doing a lot of crazy stuff with the synchronization. So to stop one sequence and wait for another one and all these things, right? Of course, conceptually, it's easy to think about it. To implement this in Comet, it's a very, very difficult thing, right? Because it will require an entire restructuring of how Comet is working.
Yeah, well, you know, we start with something that either doesn't work very well or is too hard to build, and then sort of focus in on the exact parts we need. But yeah, so I guess just to follow that train of thought there, Marius, we have the pieces we have on the, I guess on the table here are like the communication of different Comet instances controlled by, you know, each validator, the trusted communication between these instances, and thus, you know, with the whole validator set, that gives those Comet instances of you know, both of these consumer chains the ability to the ability to communicate in a trusted way with one another. But then I'm wondering, what is the overall transaction? You have any idea of maybe what the overall transaction flow looks like? So like, I want to pay extra. I'm going to pay extra fees. And I want to put in a transaction where I send some money from the Cosmos Hub to Duality, and then do an operation on their AMM. And I don't want anything, any other app operations to happen between the time that I sent the money from the Cosmos Hub and the time that it happens on Duality. And I also, you know, I want to basically be like, I never sent the transaction to Cosmos Hub if the whole thing doesn't succeed. So I was wondering, like, you know, and I have the money to pay extra for the fees. So I was wondering, how would you, you know, do you have an idea of how you get set up a system using these tools to enable that?
I was thinking about this, right? Let's say that you have the hub as the coordination point of the entire Atom Economic Zone, which it is actually, right? It's providing security. It can be another chain, but let's simplify. It's the hub, right? And you send a special transaction. It's a cross-chain transaction. This transaction, it's actually composed by a transaction that maybe runs on the hub and a bunch of other transactions that run on other chains, like Duality and so on, right? And the idea of this transaction will be committed only if all the parts for the other chains are also committed at the same time, right? So there's either that or it will not be committed. Of course, this transaction will be much more expensive than anything else because it requires this extra coordination. So at this moment, a proposer on the hub puts this transaction in the proposal, right? And now the communication starts, right? So the prepared proposal of every other proposer on the other chains can pull this information, right? Can get this information. So from the ABC I++ will come with this prepared proposal, or each proposer can customize their own proposal, right? So they can go and get their own part of the transaction that needs to run. They do that because they will get more money, right? That transaction, again, is much more expensive. So they pull that, and afterwards the communication will start so that the hub will never commit the transaction if one of the parts is not committed in the other chains. And otherwise, so basically you need to do a two-phase commit. Now, this is just an idea. I don't know exactly. I'm sure that there are complications and things that will make this a little bit more difficult to make sure that you will not have the case that a node actually decides to commit and all the others decide to not commit, right? Because you will break consensus again.
So what happens is that there is a transaction that goes onto the hub. And once that transaction is committed on the hub, then it guarantees that certain other combinations of transactions will be committed on various consumer chains. Is that the idea?
Something like that. So the transaction that goes on the hub, actually, it's one big fat transaction that contains everything, right? Some parts are actually executed. And also these blobs of data that the hub doesn't even understand, but it knows to send it so that the other chains can pull it from the query from the hub.
Yeah, they use that back channel communication between their different comment processes or whatever processes to get.
Well, you can even do it over the internet with that, because again, you can utilize the prepared proposal and you can get a simple, you can do an HTTP GET.
So,
and get it from someplace, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, so maybe Nick or Elijah can weigh in on this point as well. But what I wonder with that is that you definitely have the atomicity there. That's definitely atomic IBC. But I do wonder, do you really have the synchronicity? Because it seems like, well, I guess maybe this gets into, maybe we can't guarantee things as much as we want without getting into more general kind of MEV techniques. But it seems like if you put in that transaction on the hub that contains those blobs that do arbitrage across, you know, let's say Stride and Duality and Neutron or whatever is happening, it seems that somebody might be able to see you do that transaction on the hub before the rest of it can complete on the other consumer chains. They could go in and you know, take your arbitrage opportunity or something. That would still be possible, right, in this case?
Depends. It really depends how you set up the system, but it may be possible indeed, right? So to actually have this censorship resistance, right, this is quite difficult, because then what you have to do is to not publish the transaction until after it's committed.
Yeah, now we're getting
right, and you end up
MEV territory now.
Yeah, exactly. And you end up in this data availability thing, and there is an entire thing that Ethereum, it's research on Ethereum of how to do that with having trusted nodes that keep this data and they provide it afterwards. So it's an entire thing right there. But I think it's an orthogonal problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like that, what you suggest there would fit the bill of, and maybe, yeah, Nick, if you, I saw you unmuting yourself, but that does seem to fit the bill for atomic IBC, if maybe perhaps whether or not it's synchronous, maybe is it, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm kind of inclined to go back to blocks that share a block time, that are created at the same time and are also created by the same leader. So it seems like a solution like Marius, like what you just said. It's quite interesting. But the my main concern is around what actually happens when you have cross communication between these things. So say I want a transaction to go from chain A to chain B, but I also have another sync transaction that I want to go from B to A. You know, how do I define ordering here? How do I know which one goes first? My initial instinct is that an auction can really help fix this. So having an auction and maybe having a potentially a reserved slot at the beginning of these not shared blocks, but synchronously composed blocks, for any cross-chain transactions that are, you know, that the auction winner can decide, hey, I want to take advantage of this frozen state that's been frozen for, let's say, the last 7 seconds, and I can do that because I know my proposer is the one that's actually making the changes at the beginning of all these blocks, and I want to be the transaction that does that. my question now is, how do you validate that? How do you ensure that, hey, this actually did happen, and the proposer actually the proposal actually did include my transactions, my IBC transactions first, because I won the auction. But I feel like moving towards a it might be worth exploring a design along those lines as well.
Just really quickly, we have Phil from our IBC RS team at Informal Systems join the stage. I don't know if you heard something that you wanted to speak on.
Yeah, I think I'm tackling the problem from a different angle, and I'm wondering if I'm just completely missing something. So it seems like what we've been discussing so far is mainly if the apps don't know that they're trying to be in some atomic or synchronous setting with other chains, how can we make it work? But wouldn't it be easier to instead only ask for app support? So in the case of a arbitrage, you could have the chains, the DEXs expose a swap IBC whatever function, and that what it does is it does a swap but doesn't complete it until, and then it sends a packet that you could configure in some way. It sends a packet to some other DEX that you're interested in doing an arbitrage with, and it will only complete the swap on its chain upon successful acknowledgement from that packet. And you could have all whatever you want in the case of a swap, you could encode like slippage tolerance or whatever. And then if it works on the other chain, you get an acknowledgement, and then you complete the swap on this chain. Otherwise you unwind it. And you could even generalize it potentially to have a general sort of RPC call mechanism. So I'm going to do the swap, and then it's this RPC call thing. Like the packet structure is RPC call, and then a swap would only be a special case of that. Anyways, it's a very different approach. I don't know if people have thought about that, and it obviously doesn't work. Or
that's the first I hear of it. But it seems to me like if you perform, like, say, let's call it a virtual swap or a virtual action that doesn't complete but pretends it's been completed and waits for the acknowledgement, you are required to pause any activity on the chain that performed that virtual acknowledgement until the acknowledgement comes back. Because if there's, you know, if there's additional swaps that are happening after you've performed your virtual swap, then when you go to actually perform it, the price might be out of whack and you might actually get something completely different than what you wanted. So I'm wondering if there are, you know, any potential griefing vectors there. And also if we're doing that, if we're performing a virtual swap, and it only actually works if everything else. So this is actually a really not a bad way at all to do atomic IBC, but it seems like it's more akin to Jehan's solution of buying the blocks beforehand, because you still can't accept any more transactions after the virtual action on any chain.
Yeah, so there is already a spec on the IBC repo, interchain atomic swap, right? So I think it's number 100, that it's basically specifying exactly this. How can you do an atomic swap of two assets? But it's not about trying to get MEV out of it, so to do arbitrage. It's a different reason they're trying to do that. So I agree with Nicholas for what you are saying, right? It's you cannot guarantee this atomicity by doing so, desynchronicity, sorry, right? You cannot guarantee that the price will not change. Also, you cannot guarantee that the relayer that tries to relay that transaction will not just steal your or anybody else will just steal your MEV, because why would they not? So this is the problem with trying to do it in these steps. You need this first, you do an IBC transfer, afterwards you wait for a reply, and then you complete your transaction.
Yeah, one other thing is what occurs to me there is you can't give people a free option. So the user could also exploit this. I haven't seen that spec, so maybe someone more familiar can correct me on this. But I'm sure there's something in there that prevents this, but basically what come to mind for me is that what I would do is I would, if I was a bad person, I would set up some kind of counterparty chain, and I would do this application level atomic swap, and I would do the swap, and while the swap was theoretically being completed, I would wait and I would see where the price was going. And if the, let's say that I sold Chihuahua coin. That was my swap, my atomic swap. And I sold it. And so I'm going to watch. And if price goes down, then I'm going to keep it. I'm going to let it complete and say, yeah, good, that completed. My swap completed. I sold it. If the price goes up again, then what I would do is I would cause that to be canceled and I cause it to be rolled back. And then I would be getting a free option from that. And it would be like, I was able to basically go back in time, because you can go back in time and with your knowledge, like in Back to the Future where, he goes to the past and has like stock prices or whatever, thinking maybe it's like it's actually like a horse racing or something. But you could trade on that and become a millionaire, but like, basically if you can go back to time, even like a second back in time, it seems like it allows you to do that and gives you a free option that could allow somebody to, exploit it and make money off of everyone else on the exchange. But maybe that's not the case. So someone knows more about the atomic IBC spec than me.
What I find it interested in our discussion is that depends on the exact type of problem that we try to solve, right? What's the use case? You can play with this solution space quite a lot, right? So there are a lot of things that you can do on the current infrastructure. People are already, so for example, Skip is providing MEV solutions, right? And actually they are trying to do this cross-chain MEV as well. So I'm actually sorry that we don't have anybody from Skip here. That will be an interesting discussion. But I think it's very important to define a use case and to fix that use case in mind and let's try to enable that. Is it possible to do that now? What are the pain points? How can we solve them? It's an interesting discussion, but it seems to me more academic in the idea of, look, let's try to solve an interesting problem of how do we do atomic IBC or atomic cross-chain transactions.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I'm keeping the arbitrage use case in mind, but that might be a good step as well to actually go and write down a set of a bunch of different use cases that you want to support, and then when you come up with a solution, compare them against those use cases and see how many of the use cases are supported. And I think, if you go and look at, if you're familiar with Ethereum, like Duality Team is, then you look at, what's possible there. What do you miss, that you can't do on Cosmos over IBC, and come up with a list that way maybe.
But very interesting about Ethereum and their MEV solutions. From what I know, so again, I don't know the latest of the research, but everything is based on some type of trusted oracle or trusted node or trusted entity that either keeps your data or does something, right? So it's not, the trust assumptions are quite strong.
Yeah, I can interject here with the scheduler design, which of course you're familiar with, Marius, but basically, we had different ways we wanted to do actually, there was disagreements about them. My preferred approach though was to basically, and we can look at that, I guess. I don't know. Skip has picked up that work. I'm not sure. It probably moved beyond it at this point, but the one of the ways we were thinking about it was that you would auction off proposer rights across every chain participating in the scheduler. So you would say, Duality and Stride and Neutron are all participating in the scheduler. And now you can come in, somebody can come in, and they can basically buy the right to be the proposer for a 15-second slot. And, we were thinking about it, being like auction would be held like a day in the future or something. I don't know if it really matters or what the differences would be. But basically, well, you end up with a situation, though, where there is an entity, a centralized entity, who has the right to propose all the blocks on these three chains within this 15 second slot, which ends up being, you know, like a few blocks. And so what that would allow them to do is that if you're a person who wants to get these swaps done, or you want to get these, you know, want to use this MVV stuff, if you're that person, what you're able to do then is you can give your transactions that you want to have, you know, your MEV stuff is stuff you basically the stuff you want to have happen synchronously in some sense. You can give it to that entity that has the proposer rights. And then that entity can put those in on the separate blocks, on the separate chains, exactly how they want to make your stuff work right. And then also what we're taking for granted there is also that entity would also be running algorithms, and this is what happens with like Flashbots and stuff on Ethereum and any MEV, but they'd also be running algorithms to support many people's synchronous transactions at once. And so they are a trusted entity in that sense, because if you're a user of the of the service that's giving you these synchronous IBC transaction, MEV or whatever you want to call it, you're trusting in this particular design that I'm referencing here, you're trusting that entity to actually, like, you know, you have some kind of business relationship with them maybe, and you're trusting them to actually put your transactions in the way you want, in good faith. And also balance your transactions against, other people who might be using the service. So if you can't trust the entity who wins the proposer auction, then what will happen is that they might take your thing you want to do and give somebody else the opportunity to do it instead or something. So I think that's the trusted entity there that's kind of coming up, right, Marius?
Yes, but this is the thing. This is one design, right? So there are many, as we discussed. So I think we discussed already like four or five solutions at least, or ideas of solutions or how to go here, and to put this trust on different things, right? And what's interesting about replicated security, you do have this trust given by the replicated set, right? You have the same validator set or a huge overlap at least. And that gives you an extra layer of trust. So the question is, how can we use that to our advantage? So we remove the dependency on other oracles or other trust assumptions.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think one promising direction is the is definitely the thing you were suggesting with the having stuff go on the hub and then be kind of be adopted by the other chains, at least for the synchronous or atomic transactions. I think another direction might be looking at the shared proposer, like we were just talking about, where you maybe make it so every consumer chain, or at least they're participating in this stuff, you know, has the same proposer at the same time. We can kind of hook things up the way they should be. Nick, I wonder if you have any last words here, because we're coming on the end of the hour, or Elijah or anyone.
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting. There's a lot being thrown around. Definitely a lot to think about for days.
Awesome. Yeah, Elijah, any closing thoughts before we wrap up the space?
No, I enjoyed what everyone had to say, and yeah, it was awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it was a great conversation. I think we got into some questions, and, you know, now we're ending with kind of what's the potential and where do we go from here? And I'm looking forward to hearing everyone's thoughts kind of going forward and seeing the progress from, you know, Phil, your team, and John and Marius, your teams. So yeah, it's super exciting. And thank you so much to Elijah and Nick for joining us today and everyone in the audience. Johan, any last closing thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, so I think just in terms of the design process here, I probably, you know, if I get a chance, I will maybe write up an example list of use cases, you know, beyond just the arbitrage, so we can have something to sort of look at and evaluate solutions against. And then also maybe I think that to me during this session today, the clearest design, which may not check all the boxes, but it's a self, you know, sufficient design of the one that Marius suggested, where you have a transaction that's posted to the hub which is then kind of committed by each of the consumer chains. So maybe that would be an interesting one to start with, to write that up, compare it against the set of example use cases, and then see how it performs, and see where the shortcomings are. And
awesome. Looking forward to seeing that. And we'll definitely share that out via our Twitter. So make sure you give us a follow there. If you are interested in anything that Nick or Elijah had to say today, please give them a follow at DualityXYZ. And we will see you next week at 11 a.m. Eastern. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Informal Spaces, Atomic IBC, Synchronous IBC Live Working Session, recorded on Thursday, May 25th, 2023. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Keep listening. Head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support now.
There's this principle in Taoism where it's just like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Chirping on the bird app, listening to nerds flap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web3. That's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up their bank accounts for getting out of fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code. And now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, Yambato and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Is it really worth all the effort? Is it really worth all the fighting? Is it really worth all the drama? And the answer, I think, is a clear no.
We started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out, teaching all these plebiscites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits, all you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, this shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile over here rewiring features, more critical thinking, less knee jerk, more evolution, less shit coin preachers pretending to be teachers. Y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rat fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the bitter end. And sometimes it's better to just like move on.
Terra Spaces.